Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts, sports journalist David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves, chillin', talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave, Season 8, Episode 114. I'm Dave Bryan from SteelersDepot.com, and sitting in for David Todd on this Friday is my partner in crime, Alex Kozora. Alex, happy Friday.
Happy Friday, Dave. Training camp schedule's released. I'm a happy Alex right now.
Yeah, and haven't they? What did Bert Lawton already write this morning about one of the practices? I think had been moved.
Yeah, Monday, August 6th is now. I think they have the day off. I'm not sure what caused that, but no practice that day.
So in other words, they have 15 practices now, right?
15. Yep.
Right, and the first one is on a Thursday, correct?
Should be July 26th or 4th, the day before, whatever day that is.
I think they actually, it seems to be moved up. I think they report on, is it a Wednesday this year? And then the first practice on a Thursday. Regardless, you'll be there for 15 practices. I think that when looking at it, I thought, well, wow, that first stretch of practices will probably be the roughest one. I guess that is, right? Normally the case with you, the first, like, they have like four or five in a row.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's usually the case. I think what they have, six in a row, I think it's the longest stretch they have this year, so not too bad.
What are you looking forward to the most? Just getting back out there again or what?
Yeah, no, camp's going to – it's just a great environment. It's great to have some concrete stuff to talk about. You know, OTAs are important right now, but a lot of it's install. A lot of it's teaching the mental side. You know, you're not going to learn a ton about how players are performing in the evaluation process isn't as important. So camp is when those battles heat up. Every piece of information becomes valuable. And apparently it's going to be really busy. I know Tim Rice, our photographer, was having trouble booking a hotel. I think part camp craze, and I think there's an air show going on like that first week too. So it's going to be a really busy time in La Trobe.
Yeah, I'm looking at the schedule right now. They report on Wednesday, July 25th, and the first practice is July 26th, a Thursday. Which one did Bert say was canceled this morning?
Should have. I think it was August 6th, Monday, August 6th.
Okay, so you go 26th, 27th, 28th, 29th, and 30th. Five practices in a row with no days off, and I think that's the looks like they – yeah, that's going to be your longest stretch that you have to endure there, I believe. No, wait. You got well, let's see. The night practice is on August the 3rd, and then there's – fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh practice after that. So, but you know, things that we're used to doing over the years. I think most nights you're going to try to join me for kind of a mini recap podcast. And obviously, when you get home from La Trobe every day, you'll be putting up a short write up on that. So, after I guess we're technically what seven weeks away from that starting.
Yeah, it's coming up. We're kind of hitting the real kind of dead period right now. But, yeah, it'll be here before we know it.
Well, not totally dead just yet. They wrapped up the OTA sessions this week, and then they have the mandatory minicamp next week. And then I know for sure it's 6 weeks from then is when training camp gets underway here. All right, a lot of fuss during the OTAs about Ben and AB. Ben actually returned for the final two practices of the week. I don't think AB was back this week, so if that's the case, I think AB only attended the first two OTA practices this year. Obviously, Ben and AB are expected to be at the mandatory mini camp. I would take it that you're not overly concerned about Ben and AB missing OTA practices.
No, of course not. But I think even David Todd had talked about it. The only thing that bothered me about them missing wasn't the fact that they missed, but just the hypocrisy of, you know, Ben on the first day of OTA saying Pounce would kill me if I wasn't there. I want to be here for my guys. You know, I just made this commitment to play. And then, you know, he has the family vacation right after it to miss the rest of OTAs and for AB to kind of talk about with Bell. Now, granted, AB was asked, but, you know, he said, you know, you got to show up to get better. And then to miss that time is just kind of, you know, again, I think it's hypocritical. And then with, you know, Ben.
How does Ben not know what the OTA schedule is?
Oh, yeah, this he knew. He knew. But the thing, like his comment when he came back yesterday and he was asked, you know, why weren't you at OTAs? What was the decision behind that? And he gives this just classic Ben comment of, well, if Tomlin would have just asked me if I wanted to be there, I would have shown up. I mean, why didn't Tomlin just say something? And this, like, pass the buck, you know, put the blame on Tomlin as if you don't know if your coach wants you to be there or not. I mean, it's voluntary. It's totally up to him. I don't really care, but it's just say you just wanted to be with your family. Why make this comment that puts the blame on Ben or on Tomlin? Super weird.
Right. And plus, Tomlin can only suggest, hey, you know, if you don't have a family vacation planned, hey, we'd like to have you present. I mean, that's, to me, that's kind of an understood look. In the grand scheme of things, I don't. Someone on or a few people on the site in the comment section say, "Well, that's it." You know, Ben. That's classic Ben not being a leader and this, that, and the other. And boy, you can count on the Steelers not winning the Super Bowl this year because of this. Look, this isn't going to matter 6 weeks from now, let alone, you know, next week. But yeah, I mean, look, I get it. They're voluntary and you know, if you got nothing better to do, I would think that you would show up now. Bruce Arians was on the radio this past week saying if Ben was there, he was going to get all the reps. And that's probably true. Ben's probably not, if Ben's there, he's probably going to be front of the line. And you know, I one of the positives I think to come out of this is the fact that, you know, to hear people talk during this offseason, the offense isn't changing much. They're not getting into specific play calling just yet with Randy Feitner and all like that. Randy's not new. So, I mean, you've got three other quarterbacks on your roster, presumably battling for two spots. Ben should know what's going on. Why not let these other three guys, one of them, you know, a highly touted guy that supposedly is going to become Roethlisberger's heir, why not let these guys get, you know, the bulk of the snaps? And I can only imagine that if Ben was there, he was going to want to take the most of the reps. Now, whether or not, you know, somebody would say, hey, Ben, you know, just step aside and kind of coach these guys through it, that's a different story. And really, kind of the same thing with AB. You know, you got guys like Marcus Tucker. You got guys like James Washington, obviously. You know, Justin Hunter, you know, could use a ton of reps of learning what the hell's going on out there. DHB, not so much. But, you know, the Patterson kid who they signed after rookie minicamp. You know, obviously a lot of these young guys, they in my opinion, they should split these things up into and designate them something else. Okay, you had the rookie minicamp right after the draft. The first 2 weeks of OTAs ought to be called non-veteran non-veteran volunteer or non-vested voluntary organized team activities, and then the last one be everybody volunteer organized team activities, and then obviously the mandatory minicamp after that. They're not going to do it. I'm being facetious here in saying this, but it does not hurt. I guess in the grand, outside of the silly comments made by AB and really, like you said, the hypocrisy of it all, I'm glad the young kids got the reps.
Yeah, I mean, there's certainly a clear upside to some of the veterans and stars not being there. And it's like you said, those young guys get to have a lot of reps that they're not going to have when camp starts and certainly not when the season starts. So that's a great time for those guys to take advantage of an opportunity. You mentioned Marcus Tucker. I know Justin Hunter was running with the ones, which is something that's not going to happen on a day-to-day basis when everyone's, you know, there and accounted for at camp, you know, with Juju out and AB not being around. So it's a good opportunity. I mean, there's certainly an upside to it. I just thought, you know, the only thing I cared about was some of the comments, and kind of just they rubbed me the wrong way. But I mean, like you said, it's not a big deal at all.
Yeah, it's just the overall hypocrisy of it all. And then, as you said, the, you know, the way he kind of, well, if Tomlin had asked me to be here, I would have been.
Right.
Been
it's been here. 11 years, Ben. Tomlin wants you to be there. Yeah. We all know that.
And as far as well, you know, I didn't know the schedule well. Ben's been to OTAs enough that I think he knows what part of the calendar those things are going to be on without even having an official schedule. But you know, like I started off with, I'm not upset over it. I mean, obviously, if you had your druthers, you would want Ben and AB to be there. They weren't. End of story. OTAs are over. Next thing's up, mandatory minicamp. Anything else that came out of OTAs that we may have gathered, you know, from a player interview or, you know, look, I mean, the media obviously can't report what's going on unless a player tells them what's going on. I guess, you know, Mike Hilton talking about the seven DBs.
Yeah, and it was, granted, a kind of a one-off comment. He was asked about it, but, you know, it's something that I kicked around, had written about previously that, you know, the Steelers in Week 17 against Cleveland last year used the seven defensive back package a couple times, and Cam Sutton, I think, was that seventh guy on the field. And again, you could be in a situation where you have so much talent in the secondary, and if guys like Sutton plays well and Edmonds plays well, you know, could you look for ways to get them on the field too? Because, you know, I mean, we can talk about Cam Sutton. You know, where is he going to play? Does he have a home, or is he going to have to wait for an injury to happen?
And that's what we've kind of asked the question with, dating back to late last year, right? You know, is how are you going, or really this offseason, how are you going to get him on the field?
Yeah, and I think they like Cam Sutton, and I think he will definitely get playtime, because I'm of the belief that the second there's an injury essentially at any defensive back spot, it's going to create an opportunity for Sutton, whether that is a starting corner or a dime guy or whatever the case is. I mean, he's going to get time, but, you know, if you want to find an extra way to get him playtime because you're happy with the way he's progressing, if that is the case, then, you know, could you do a real heavy seven defensive back look on third and long, third and 10 plus, like they did last year against the Browns? So I thought it was an interesting comment, something I'll watch out for. You know, we're a ways away from that. They haven't even done their dime install in OTAs. It's all been, I think, base and nickel. So, you know, we won't know that until camp, but it's something I'm going to keep an eye on.
You think they'll reveal some of that? Well, they obviously would have to during camp, but as far as preseason goes, we might not see it, huh?
Yeah, I doubt in a game. I mean, it's going to be pretty vanilla in terms of the personnel. You want to keep things simple and light for these guys. I think maybe you might not even see true dime in preseason games. But in camp, I imagine they'll show some of it. I mean, if you're going to run it in the regular season, you got to at least rep it at some point during training camp.
Right. What do you think about the chances of Sutton hitting the 500 snap mark somehow?
I think it's going to have to be an injury involved for that to happen. I mean, is that how I'm supposed to interpret that?
Well, I mean, without injury, I mean, you think there'd be enough rotation or whatnot, you know?
No, not without an injury. Unless Burns just, you know, plays terrible again and they decide to bench him. But, I mean, on the surface, there wouldn't be that opportunity for that many snaps. But, I mean, if you consider with an injury, you know, who knows? Because if an outside corner goes down, who's going to be up? Sutton. If Hilton goes down, who's going to be up? Sutton. If a safety goes down and you need an extra guy for dime packages, who's going to be that guy? Probably Sutton. So, I mean, there's going to be a lot of opportunity there. It's just going to take an injury to get him on the field.
Where are you at right now with Artie Burns?
It's a make or break year, and it's kind of similar to Sean Davis. It's kind of similar to Bud Dupree, where, you know, Burns has talent. We've seen him make plays. It's all about consistency. It's all about above the neck, I think, as Tomlin would say. Being consistent with your rules, you know, not blowing assignments, being sound with your run fits, you know, the cracker play stuff we've talked about before. There's big play potential there. He had such a good camp last year. He was the only guy that could even come close to shutting down Antonio Brown. And then it just doesn't translate the way that you would hope once the regular season starts. And we have to see the flashes and the obvious talent he has be able to translate fully.
Where you're at right now, you know, a year from now, the Steelers will have had to make have made the decision with him as far as a fifth year option goes. If you had to make that decision right now, are you picking up his fifth year option?
Am I personally, or do I think the Steelers will do it?
Yes.
I think the Steelers probably do it. I mean, they picked up Dupree, and you know, a lot of people didn't think that would happen. I wasn't even that confident it would happen. I mean, I'm glad I have a year to figure that out. I'll say that much.
Yeah, I'm with you. And look, I mean, Bud, you know, I wasn't confident the Steelers were going to pick up Bud Dupree's fifth-year option this year.
Same.
You know, I mean, obviously, there was a better chance of that happening than, say, you know, Jarvis. I mean, it was easy to lean on the others. And the thing is really Kevin Colbert's comments about Dupree kind of mirrored this past offseason, kind of mirrored what he had said about Jarvis, you know, the previous season. Now, obviously, there's been situation. Look, we knew David DeCastro, he was going to have that fifth-year option picked up. We knew Ryan Shazier was going to have his fifth-year option picked up. We knew Cameron Hayward back when that, you know, we knew that was going to happen there. We're getting into the area with a few of these guys where it's kind of questionable a year out, you know, and you would hope that a year out with your first round draft pick, you're slam dunk and said, boy, I can't wait till the Steelers get to, you know, can't be soon enough for them to pick up their fifth year option on him. So yeah, I think this is a huge year for Artie Burns, and like you, I think a lot of it's between the ears. I mean, it's not from an athletic standpoint. It's a lot of the things that obviously during his time in college, we didn't know so much about, you know, his lack of football IQ, but the signs were there, being as how, I mean, he ran track during the off season at Miami. You know, he didn't just really have a lot of practice time, I don't think, in Miami,
right,
as a whole. And then there were even the red flags about during his final season at Miami, where he wasn't even on the field all the time, you know? And that's one of the things that concerned me. That, you know, I still go, you know, it's too early to you know, throw Artie Burns out with the bathwater, obviously. But, you know, there were a lot of reasons why I think many of us had Artie Burns as a second-round guy and were a bit shocked when he was taken first round. And really, you know, I guess you could, with Edmonds this year, it's almost, I think Edmonds has a much higher, from what I can tell, a much higher football IQ. But there was a shock value with Edmonds this year that there really was a few years ago with Artie Burns, right?
Yeah, that's a really good comparison. And I don't like to play this game too often because obviously it's pretty useless, but
right, and obviously, who the hell cares if we're shocked, you know?
Well, no, I was going to say, how different would this team be if they drafted William Jackson III, who they wanted to take until the Bengals took him? I mean, to have that shut down number one corner, wow, that'd be fantastic.
And he has looked good so far for them, especially last season. You know,
even against AB, I mean, he's held AB in check, I think at least twice now. He's done a great job.
Wouldn't that have violated one of the Steelers' rules of drafting, though?
I'm all for it. Violate the rules. I can get a quarter like him. Do it.
If anything, we got out of this year with a lot of our rules intact, so we'll be able to carry those over to next year and pester and bring them up 80 times during the offseason to pester. Look, they're going to get broken at some point, but, I mean, it's a hell of a track record. You know, Kevin Colbert, you know, has going right now when it comes to Power Five guys, when it comes to, you know, the other stuff that we like to rattle off related to that. But, yeah, I mean, and people will still – the thing that gets me, I think, in the criticism of not getting William Jackson is people just think there's magically this button that you push that other teams agree to a trade, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, should you be able to make any trade you want during an NFL draft? Probably, you know, 80% of them. But I mean, how much are you going to have to give up is the kind of thing there. So, it would have been nice. But look, and we still have to give Artie Burns, if you know, at least a few more, at least this season. But I am a bit concerned about him, and he is a guy that you have to wonder, you know, if he does struggle to start at start of this season, if he's a guy that maybe goes to the bench, a la who was it? Cortez Allen a few years ago, right?
Yeah, no, I think that's a real possibility. You know, I don't think it's going to happen week one. I think he's going to get the first month of the season or so to, you know, to prove himself, and hopefully he does play well. The Steelers need Artie Burns to play well. I'm rooting for him as hard as anybody. But if he struggles, if he shows up those same kind of inconsistent, you know, inconsistencies, I don't think this team's going to hesitate to go to Sutton if the opportunity's there, because I think they like Sutton, they like his football IQ. I mean, it's hard to find two more different guys at corner than Cam Sutton and Artie Burns. You know, Burns blessed with physical tools, Sutton not so much, but the football IQ, the versatility, pretty different.
Absolutely, and Sutton, if there's, you know, we talked about football smart several years ago with Dorian Grant when he was drafted. He makes from the sound of things, Sutton makes Dorian Grant seem like Artie Burns, you know?
Yeah, I mean, Sutton's playing everything in OTAs, nickel, corner, I think some safety. I don't know exactly the capacity of that, but, I mean, he's a second-year guy that had the first half of his rookie year wiped out, and, I mean, the guy's playing like a vet in terms of how they're using him.
Where do you think Brian Allen mixes in all this?
Gunner. I mean, backup, reserve. I mean, it's good to hear the progress. I'm excited to see him take a step in year two. You're hoping for a big step now that he's got a year under his belt, another year at corner. You know, things have slowed down for him considerably, I assume. But, I mean, he's not going to have a big role in the defense, I don't think.
Who is the – I mean, generally we see at least one defensive back sit at times inactive. Who's it going to be this year? Or are all of them going to be dressed? What are they going to keep, 9, 10?
Yeah, at least 10. I mean, they could even go 11 if they want to go, you know, that heavy. I don't know exactly what they've done in the past, but it's been 10 or 11, I think. Yeah, I don't know. I'd have to sit down and make a list. But, I mean, you'd like Allen to be active on game days because he does offer some special teams value. And with Sutton having to wear so many hats, you want to have some extra depth there because Sutton might be doing – you know, slot work, and then if, you know, someone else goes down, you want to have an extra guy like Allen to play on the outside.
Is this the Steelers' deepest and most talented the Steelers' secondary has been since when? Early 2000s?
Well, I don't know if I go that far. I mean, in terms of talent, the talent's undeniable, but, I mean, these are a lot of young guys that have not played a lot of football, so it's hard to say exactly how good the depth is because we just don't know too much about, you know, guys like Brian Allen, Terrell Edmonds, and, you know, some of the guys like that. So we'll know more shortly, but I think it's a little hard to say exactly how good the depth is just because it hasn't been tested yet.
And I think, I think it's going to take six games. Generally takes about six games into the season, I think, before we start getting a better idea of. I mean, look, I mean, Cleveland shouldn't be a contest for the Steelers, you know, at least from their defense handling the Browns' offense to open the season. You know, so you're gonna have to wait for the first test or two, I think, to come along there. And usually, like I said, six. You know, about week six, we'll look at that net yards, adjusted net yards per passing attempt, and kind of go from there. Bud Dupree, Chuck Smith was the sack whisperer was at it again a little over a week ago on the Prisco podcast. Chuck Smith, in case you're just catching up with us, obviously former NFL player, has his own instructional school, if you will. Bud Dupree's been going to that at least a couple of years now, I think. Last year, Chuck Smith said, you know, expected a breakout year for Bud Dupree. That didn't happen. Chuck Smith's back at it again this year, saying this is I meant this one. This is the one that you know, don't give up on Bud Dupree just yet. But what was a little bit different about some of his comments this time is he got specific. Now, it's not like he didn't tell us anything that we didn't already know. For those of us that have watched a lot of tape on Bud Dupree, Bud Dupree needs some signature pass rush moves. Hello?
Yeah. I mean, not only is he lacking a secondary counter move, you know, he still does not exactly have that, like you said, that go-to pass rush move. I mean, he wants to win with speed and that, you know, speed rush, but, you know, without a great counter move, I think tackles are able to kind of sit on it and be able to you know, seal him upfield without too much of an issue. So, yeah, but I've been more optimistic about Dupree than I think most people, I'm going to walk that back a little bit this year compared to last year. I still have hope and optimism, but I'm not going to, you know, predict a double-digit sack season like Dupree is right now.
He's in a recent interview, he said he missed out on double-digit sacks last year because he missed some. How many do you think he missed? There wasn't many that he missed, right?
Yeah, I mean, I just did an article kind of on the subject, and I went through, I think, all of his pressures last year that didn't result in sacks, and there was only one that was like a clear miss, that one on Dalton, I think in the second matchup against Cincinnati, where he kind of just, I don't know if you remember the play where he
just stopped and
just let him go. That was the only super obvious one, but there's other ones where I think, you know, where other issues came up, you know, poor rush balance, poor, you know, gap integrity that created escape lanes for the quarterback, where Dupree won his matchup, but the quarterback was able to escape. So, I mean, you could argue that, you know, he missed out on those sacks, but you know, that doesn't do us any good anyway. You know, you don't get paid for all those sacks or missed sacks. It's all about just getting the job done.
Now, if he had more, look, I mean, which came first, the sack or the pressure? You know, that's what kids will be talking about instead of the chicken and egg 20 years from now, probably. But look, I'm fine with nice, consistent, I guess what we should start calling them is high quality pressures, right? I mean, mm-hmm. Maybe this is something we should start tracking, more than sacks, especially in today's NFL where the ball comes out so quickly. I was watching. Have you been watching some of the? They showed the other after Dwight Clark passed the other night. They showed the championship game between the Cowboys and the 49ers. Did you watch that broadcast?
I did not.
Oh man, it just seems like every other snap, both defensive lines were just all over the quarterback. Okay, now, of course, they had a lot of, you know, seven-step drops and all. Of course, not so much with the 49ers and you know, the kind of the West, really the beginning, I guess, of the integration of seeing a lot of West Coast offense and all. But, man, it just seemed like every other snap, Danny White was under pressure. Joe Montana was under pressure. And they just whooping these offensive linemen. And a lot of guys that you're scratching your head say, oh, I remember that guy. You know, in other words, they weren't household guys getting this done. And, you know, I don't know if it speaks to just how much quicker the ball's coming out now. You know, these, you know, we're seeing these RPOs are now more in vogue and getting the football out. But it just, if anybody has a chance, if you see some of those old games, you know, go sit and watch them and watch how quickly those guys are getting to the quarterback. And you just don't see that anymore. And I guess what I'm getting at is, man, we need to start seeing Bud Dupree. I mean, when is the last time that you saw Bud Dupree get a high-quality sack or a high-quality pressure off of any, you know, off of anything other than a quick first step?
Yeah, we've talked about that before. A lot of his sacks have come from either scheme or effort. And again, there's nothing wrong with that. You take sacks wherever you get it. But when you evaluate Dupree on his own and you look at, you know, is he making that sort of high level impact by himself? It hasn't always been there. So, I mean, what are your thoughts for this year, Dave? I mean, do you go in with any expectations of what he'll do? Do you think he can hit double digit sacks like he says so?
If he hits double digit, it's right at double digit at 10, and there's some there. It's full of not high quality ones.
So you're pretty lukewarm on his prospects this year.
Yeah, I'm pretty. I hope he proves me wrong. You know, obviously, I mean, we just haven't seen him have that rip move. We haven't seen him have that cross chop. We haven't seen him have that hands in the sternum and bull rushing. You know, I think a lot of this, you know, I think pass rushing a lot of times is good feel and having a plan, you know, and I just don't, I think he's just relied too much on that first step on him, which, I mean, look, he's got a great first step. Nobody, I think he anticipates the snap much better than T.J. Watt even does. But T.J. Watt at least has shown us that he's got pass, and Chuck Smith even said as much. You look out the other side, and T.J. Watt, what did he say? He said J.J. Watt's little brother has shown us he's got moves.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I think it's a bit concerning when even Chuck Smith. You know, I mean, what is Chuck Smith supposed to say? No, I don't think Bud Dupree's. I don't think he's going to bust out this year. Mm-hmm. This guy's paying me a lot of money. I don't think this is going to be it. I mean, obviously. You know, there's going to be some level of hyperbole, as I like to say here. But, I mean, there's to me, from watching him going all the way back to Kentucky, I mean, he didn't have high quality sacks at Kentucky. And here we are, you know, several years into his NFL career, and he still has it. I mean, is flipping sides going to all of a sudden do that? I mean...
No, I mean, it's not going to make an average pass rusher great. I think that there is some benefit to it in the sense of what they've talked about, Dupree and I think Watts talked about, of getting different looks, not facing the same tackle every time, basically just trying to break up the monotony and maybe some tendency breakers and taking advantage of some guys where you match up better versus the left tackle or the right tackle. I guess my only concern with Dupree is that if he's going to play on the right side more often, and I don't know exactly what the split's going to be, I mean, historically under, I think, LeBeau's defense too, but especially Keith Butler, that right outside linebacker's dropped about 10% more than the left outside linebacker. So if Dupree's dropping back even more than he did last year, I mean that's going to hurt him in terms of potential to get sacks all the more.
Yeah, that's a great point too. And but look, I mean, who's the better dropper of the two? Really, Watt is it?
Right, which is why I kind of want to keep Watt on the right side, at least if they're going to go with the mindset of the right guy, right side, you know, drops more than the left.
And
so I don't know.
You know, this rolls back to not drafting an edge rusher this year either. Kind of, you know, Chicklo is what he is, right? I mean,
and you can throw my Shane Ray idea out the window. Ray's going to have wrist surgery again, so not interested anymore.
Yeah, and that's another guy, really, that the light hasn't completely come on with. I mean, look, I understand why you went that way with Shane Ray, but, yeah, if he needs wrist surgery, that's definitely not going to happen right before the season starts. Now, I tell you, I think, we talk a lot about inside linebacker and worried about what's going on there and the depth. It's the same way with outside linebacker. I mean, you definitely don't want to get into a position where Chicklo or Adeniyi or Farrington Hugonen or Keon Adams are getting snaps, you know. And if you do, you better hope that you've uncovered a diamond there.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great point. I think, like you said, you have some of the same concerns at outside linebacker as you do at inside. Maybe the outside gives you a little bit more comfort because you've seen these guys play a little bit more often than, you know, obviously what Bostic hasn't taken a snap in Pittsburgh and Dirty Red hasn't gotten a lot of play time on defense. But, the philosophy in Pittsburgh is to rush four. They Butler blitzed at an all-time low last year, so that puts the onus on, you know, those edge guys to get the job done, and they have to.
Right, and you talk about winning, and boy, we went way down this rabbit hole today. We didn't think we were going to go down this path, but you have to be able to get pressure with four, and you know we've talked a couple of times about, well, what are they going to do? Are they going to be able to get guys like Tuitt and Hayward off the field a little bit more? I'd be scared to death rushing four without Tuitt Hayward on the field with leaving Watt and Dupree out there.
Yeah, that's a great point. That's a great point.
You know, we're talking about, okay, well, we want them to get pressure with four. We want Dupree to be part of that getting pressure with four. But on the flip side, we want Tyson Alualu and Javon Hargrave out there a little bit more this year. I'm not looking forward to that, to be honest with you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, again, we all understand.
You better play a whole hell of a lot of good man on the back end of that.
Yeah, and you better hope you get some bad quarterback play or bad offensive line play or something. But, you know, we all know the Steelers led the league at sacks last year, but this does not feel like a Blitzburg team of old in terms of their ability to get consistent pressure. You're not going to be able to whip on Cleveland every single year. That kind of skews the numbers a bit. I mean, well, they have like 15 sacks in two meetings against Cleveland last year.
And that was exactly where I was going to about go next, because someone hit me up on Twitter last night. So, well, they had record sacks last year. Yes, they did, and it was great to see. I mean, especially after some seasons in there when they had like, what, 38 or whatever it was, during kind of the final couple of years with LeBeau there. Yeah, it was great, but a lot of, how many of them came against, Bobo teams, if you will. I mean, look, you had the Browns twice, got some nice and easy ones in there. Who else did they rack up against? Houston? How many did they have against Houston?
I mean, yeah, Hilton alone had three that game, which, I mean, credit to him. It's not that, those sacks don't count. It's just
right.
You know,
they all count, but you got to look at the level of competition on the other side and how you're beating a team too.
Yeah, I mean, it's just from my perspective, it's just, does that really give you good representation of how good your pass rush is? Because, when this team's going to make a playoff run, do they really have that type of pass rush, or is it, being skewed by some lesser opponents that you're not going to face in the playoffs? And I think that's what happened last year. You saw the Jacksonville game. They couldn't touch Blake Bortles. That was the true representation of the Steelers pass rush.
And you go back several years before that in the playoff game against the Colts, and when they needed Joey Porter to get after the quarterback, Peyton Manning, he was able to get after the quarterback.
Yeah, you're talking about 2005? Is that what you're referring to?
Yes.
The Bettis fumble game, right?
Yes.
And they get the sack on, was it a sack on fourth down, I think, to turn the ball over, wasn't it? That led to the Bettis fumble, but...
Didn't Porter have two sacks, two key sacks?
He might have, yeah.
In that game. But, that's the first thing that jumps out of my mind when you talk about, man, when you really need a sack, against a good team, you better be able to get one. And I'm not convinced that team last year could do that.
Right. Or the Cardinals Super Bowl. Wasn't it Kiesel that strip sacked Kurt Warner to end that one?
Right,
I mean, it was
right.
That last play of the game, but still, the Cardinals didn't get a chance to throw a Hail Mary or anything. So, that's just my point. While the 56 sacks look good, when you look at the quality of those sacks and look at some of the numbers that are skewed against lesser opponents, when you think about, in a playoff run when this team has a chance to play, two to four games, can they can they show that pass rush? Can they show like they're a 56 pass rush team? And I think the answer last year was no.
Well, look, they picked up this fifth-year option with Bud Dupree. So they obviously they're not doing that unless they, unless they think this is going to maybe be the year that he turns the corner. I'm not putting the sack number out there is obviously not fair, because there players can miss sacks. Athletic quarterbacks can avoid a great pressure. But what I do want to see is some great pressures out of Bud Dupree, and that's just something that we haven't seen so far during his career.
Yep, I agree. We'll see what happens.
Peyton Manning was sacked twice in that game.
Porter definitely got to him at the end there.
Porter got to him at the end, and I'm trying to remember who got the other sack in that game. Oh, wait a minute.
Clark Hagans? Did Hagans get one?
Two and a half sacks for Farrier in that game. One and a half for Porter. And Kemo had one. They had five. Wait a minute. Oh, I was looking at first half sacks. They had five sacks, I think, in that. They sacked Manning five times in that game.
Wow. Farrier had one and a half?
Farrier had two and a half sacks in that game.
Wow.
Try to read off when some of these things happen. Manning sacked by Von Ohlhofen in the first quarter, first and 10 with 3:12 left. A few plays later, Manning sacked on second. Here's the thing: second and 15. Manning never. Manning never was Manning considered a great quarterback in converting long situations?
I have no idea. I have no idea who even is a good quarterback in that.
Ben's good at converting extremely long situations. Second and 15, 1:18 left in the first. Farrier got him in that game. And then third quarter, third and 10. Just goes to show you down a distance here. Third and 10, Manning sacked by Farrier with 5:37 left in the third quarter. And in the fourth quarter, second and 8 from the Indy 20, Farrier got Manning. And then two plays later, it was split by Porter and Farrier. That was the fourth and 16 sack there. And that, I believe, is it, my friend. But I don't know why that one just jumped out at me there. But look, I mean, it's going to be a cause for concern. I don't care if they registered 9 sacks against the Cleveland Browns to get things started. I want to see some quality sacks here out of these guys. Okay, what else? Anything else? Some of these quotes come out of OTAs.
Well, I think that was the majority that caught my eye. If anything caught your eye, Dave, let me know. But real quick, since we were mentioned Farrier, it's actually funny you say that. Quick tease, we'll have an interview with James Farrier that Ron Lippick did. Ron does a great job with these talking to past Steelers players. So interview with James Farrier on Monday, Steelers Depot.
All right, great. What was the one thing Keith Butler is getting wrong about the Steelers' pass rush?
Yeah, I don't know what you thought on the article, Dave. I thought it was a really good discussion. It's something that's bugged me for a while, just kind of my own gut feeling. But you know, the long story short is, I think Butler is playing his inside guys on the edge too often as pass rushers, and I think they're way more effective rushing from the interior than they are on the outside, which is intuitive. Whenever you have Shazier or Vince Williams against a tackle, you know, get him in the interior, get him in a straight line, hitting the A or the B gaps on a guard or a running back. It's hard to go into all the numbers. The post is on Steelers Depot if you guys want to check it out if you haven't done so already. But, the success rate of pressure and sacks at inside linebacker or when guys are rushing from the inside linebacker spot is much higher than when they are in the outside spot. And I think Butler's got to make some changes there.
And we've seen Vince Williams destroy some running backs.
Yeah, and usually, I mean, he's done on the edge. You know, he had one sack on the edge last year when he blew up Kareem Hunt. But, I mean, he's making his money on the interior. And Shazier, who I think another thing from my study is that Shazier's just kind of a poor pass rusher overall. But, whether that's Shazier, whether that's Bostic, Medikevich, those guys, they're going to do their damage from the inside, not on the edge.
And if you're going to blitz them on the insides, they have to get home.
Yeah, but I mean, Vince Williams did a great job of it, and I think that's where guys are more capable of. I think that, you know, that's where you get better matchups. You're not facing tackles. You're going to have the size advantage and the length advantage and are just natural pass protectors where your inside linebacker might not be a natural pass rusher. I prefer the A and the B gap pressure to the edge pressure. I want to collapse the pocket and let my edge guys go to work on the, where they're naturally going to be comfortable at. Rather than trying to force a guy who basically is playing in a role he's not used to, rushing on the edge.
Something I wrote about this past week, Marcus Gilbert. Marcus, look, the Steelers, and you heard David Todd and I throwing out those. Were you surprised at all by those numbers? You probably had a probably good idea about those numbers with the starting five. Plus AB, Ben, and Bell last year, right? I mean, it doesn't. If you paid close attention to the season and knew what guys missed what games with injuries, it probably wasn't hard to figure out, and suspensions, probably wasn't hard to figure out that was going to be a low number, right?
Right. I think I was actually lower than the actual number. David Todd had some good guesses, so I'm not going to try to compete with him.
Right. Now, the thing about that is you know, including Gilbert in that, the best thing I think that the Steelers had happen to him last year is really that they didn't overly miss Marcus Gilbert, right?
Yeah, I mean, Hubbard did a great job filling it, no doubt about it.
Now you don't have Hubbard as the safety net there, and, you know, you're not going to have Gerald Hawkins either, which, by the way, for those of you curious, I double checked. Hawkins does not have, in this year of his contract, does not have a split contract. So not that it's a huge deal, but there's not going to be any savings with him going on IR there either. And the last time Alex and I got together, which David and Todd and I have since corrected there, we figured out the that new bylaw related to injured players. So that put our guessing work aside there, that what you and I talked about in that last podcast, Alex. But no split contract there for Gerald Hawkins, so his number is going to stick as it is right now. Once again, there wasn't going to be a huge amount of savings there, but I know a lot of people were interested in knowing that fact. You're not going to have Gerald Hawkins this year, and now you're in a situation where, you know, is it going to be Chooks? Is it going to be the new guy, Bryce Harris? What do you know about Bryce Harris, who the Steelers signed recently? And I assume you're going to have a little bit more on Bryce Harris in the coming days.
Yeah, I'll probably write up something, maybe not as in-depth as some of the other, you know, not as in-depth as Bostic or Burnett, because I don't think Harris has great odds to make the team. But he's just a journeyman. I mean, he's a guy that's been in the league since 2012, has been with seven or eight teams now. He's bounced back and forth between, like, Atlanta and the Saints. He was back and forth with them. He's got, I think, four career starts at tackle. So, you know, just to get a veteran guy that's played some football that I assume is swing capable. I assume he's played both tackle spots as a journeyman. That's probably usually the role those guys take on. And just to kind of get some depth back for the offensive line. So not someone I'm really expecting to make the team. Trying to think of a good comparison, some of the old veteran guys they've had in camp before. I'm trying to think of a good name, but I'm not expecting Harris.
Is Ryan Harris a comparison or no?
I think Ryan Harris was better. I think Harris is a guy that you counted on that makes the team. Obviously, he had some injury problems that derailed him playing long term. But I'm trying to think of someone even more obscure.
Oh wow!
I'd have to look up. I mean, I don't have a particular name in mind.
Back to Marcus Gilbert here. We have seen. I mean, look, he missed. The good news is the time that he missed last year was mostly related to a hamstring. The other time he missed last year was related to a suspension. We have seen in recent years prior to last season, Marcus Gilbert string together some good seasons. I mean, when he's been on the field, he has been good, and make no mistake about it. The last few seasons of Marcus Gilbert versus the first two or three seasons of Marcus Gilbert, it's like you're dealing with a totally different player, right? Because, I mean, his physique alone is, right. I mean, it's impressive what the body transformation that he has had throughout his career. The thing is with Marcus Gilbert is, I think, what did I write the other day? His next missed regular season game will be his 30th.
That's a lot.
That's a lot. I mean, that's a lot. I mean, it's not half, obviously, but, I mean, that's a lot. Because remember, what was it, like 2 or 3 years into his season, he only played 5 games because of that ankle or foot injury. And then, you know, last year missing the amount of games that he did. And I'm trying to think. Seems like he's had a quad or something in the past. I think this year is a big year for him. You would be shocked right now if Marcus Gilbert got a new contract before the start of this season, right?
Oh yeah, I'd be floored. I don't think there's any reason the Steelers would do that right now.
Now there was a year ago or right around a year ago, there was a report by Jeremy Fowler saying Drew Rosenhaus, you know, around the Steelers office, you know, Marcus Gilbert may be hoping for a new deal. Well, him missing the amount of games that he missed last season, that, to my opinion, that threw that idea out the window. Now, Marcus Gilbert probably cost himself a lot of money last year in more ways than one. I mean, he obviously missed out on some money because of the suspension, but and him not playing made, you know, the Steelers probably keep, I don't know, the Steelers probably keep Chris Hubbard this offseason if Marcus Gilbert plays, right?
Yeah, because Hubbard doesn't get the chance to show that he can play. He doesn't get paid like he does. That's a funny point.
Right. You know, what does Mike Tomlin say? One man's misfortune is another man's opportunity. And Chris Hubbard sure did take advantage of the opportunity. What I'm getting at here is, you know, Marcus Gilbert has to stay on the field this year. And he has to be that Marcus Gilbert from a couple of years ago that we thought got snubbed. Or you could make an argument got snubbed out of the Pro Bowl. If he's if he's able to do that, I think a lot of a lot of our fears are going to be lessened here. And make no mistake about it, we didn't know if Hawkins could become this year's version of Hubbard. In fact, chances are good that Hawkins wasn't going to be that guy. But I mean, the last thing you want right now is Chooks to have to be rushed into a starting job. Obviously, look, Alejandro Villanueva going to the Pro Bowl last year, I think we all know that was kind of a farce. But with that said, Alejandro Villanueva is not as bad as a left tackle as some people want to make him out to be, right?
No, yeah, I think there's certainly a middle ground between the people that think he's a top, you know, three offensive tackle and people that think he's overrated. I'm in that middle camp. I mean, with Gilbert, the talent's there. I think he'll have a good year. It's just a question of him staying healthy. But I think that, you know, although he had the issues last year, I think part of that was him rushing himself back from the initial injury. I think one reason why he's lost as much weight as he has and put himself in great shape was that he was dealing with all those constant joint and lower body, ankle and quad or whatever issues his first couple of years, I think, because he had a lot of weight on. I think he had a lot of bad weight, and that probably stressed him and made him a higher injury risk. But I think that's one reason why he's really transformed his body, like you said. I think he'll have a great year. You know, he's got to stay healthy, of course, but I think he'll have a solid season. Real quick, I was trying to find some old obscure names to compare Bryce Harris to. I mean, you could look at like a Guy Whimper is kind of how I view a Bryce Harris.
Oh, just someone yuck.
That's kind of a journeyman that's got some versatility, but certainly not anybody you want to play for a long time. I mean, even like a Bryant Browning, if you remember him from a couple years ago, who had bounced around, didn't have the experience in terms of, you know, games played in roster time, but was just kind of a swing guy that was okay, but not someone you really want playing too much for you.
Do you remember when Guy Whimper had to play right guard?
I'm reading his Wikipedia page right now. It's the most passive-aggressive thing. It says Whimper was seen as extremely unlikely to make the Steelers roster, much less play, and much less than that, play well. Whimper played extensively against the Ravens on October 20th, and in the face of much skepticism, played well. So, yeah, the Guy Whimper days, the Jonathan Scott days, they were some dark times.
Wasn't that the game that he had to play guard?
It doesn't say. Baltimore Ravens, October 20th of 2013. That's probably it. I'm guessing that's it.
I think that's the one that he had to play some guard with DeCastro getting dinged. I forget, but yeah, those weren't there, or Ligurski or somebody got dinged or something, I think. Boy, when you look back, here's something to think about here. I want to hit on two things. Boy, it's funny how with these shows we can't think about anything to talk about until I get on here and I start rambling and taking us down rabbit holes, and then they turn into an hour and a half shows.
You got some improv comedy background.
Half of it's me stuttering, but you know, hell with it. But this offensive line, Alex, I mean, the fact that they've been able to keep these five together as long as they have, A, is just something that you just don't see a lot of. This unit, I mean, this five-man unit, there's no apologies to be made here. I mean, this should be, you know, I know you can look around the league and this, you know, rank these offensive line. This should be the league's top offensive line, if you ask me.
Yeah, I mean, it has every, you know, thought to every reason to be right at the top. And you're right, it's incredible. Not only have they been able to find that talent, but just hit on that talent across the board. I mean, no, you know, failure really first round picks with DeCastro and Pouncey, you know, high picks like Gilbert, and then the fine gems like Villanueva. So, I mean, it's all come together perfectly, and they have to play at a high level.
And I'm not so worried about interior. My biggest fear about the depth there is it should B.J. Finney have to come in and play center. I like Finney to play guard and left guard at that, and be honest with you. I mean, I thought Filer represented himself good at right guard last year as well, too, you know, preseason on into the season. Now, I don't want to see Filer play tackle. I definitely don't want to see him play left tackle. Here's the hope we don't have to see Chooks play any much of any this year. And
well, those guys are going to have to play. At some point, you know they're going to get pressed into action.
Right. I mean, for all five of these guys to play 1,000 snaps, it's probably asking much. Right.
Yeah.
But, I mean, for a long period of times, obviously.
Sure.
The other thing is can you name the offensive players that played the predominant amount of snaps in the Steelers' AFC Championship game in 2016 against the Patriots?
Ah, Dave, the Riddler. I don't know. I wasn't expecting this. In 2016,
right?
And what? And the question is, who played predominantly?
Who? You know? Well, I'm not setting this up. Look, I mean, obviously the offensive line was there: Villanueva, Foster, yeah. Pouncey, DeCastro, and Gilbert. And I think those guys played nearly the full game. But when you go back and look at here is the predominant amount of snaps played by the. You remember Bell went out early in that game, right?
Yeah, with a hammy, right? Hammy quad.
What was it?
It was the groin.
Groin, right.
Oh, yeah, the groin right. expert.
Jesse James played 67 of 69 snaps in that game.
Yeah.
Obviously, Antonio Brown played the lion's share. Eli Rogers played 59 of 69. D'Angelo played 58 of 69. Kobe Hamilton played 42 of 69.
How many did Coates play?
And Coates played 17.
Yeah. Hate that. Yeah.
Is it a wonder that offense couldn't do much in that game?
Yeah, I was watching that in an airport, which was just the worst thing ever.
And isn't it something how, you know, we tried to give the Steelers a glimmer of hope going into that game, probably.
Yeah, I mean, you didn't know Bell's situation, that it was bad as it was.
Yeah, but the fact that we, you know, Kobe Hamilton was Kobe Hamilton. You know, mm-hmm. D'Angelo was D'Angelo. I mean, Jesse... was Jesse Coates. I mean, was Coates. I mean, Darius Hayward-Bay only played 10 snaps in that game. David Johnson played 7. Grimble played it's yucky mm-hmm. when you go back. I mean, the highlight of all that was the offensive line. Every member on the offensive line, which is still the offensive line today, played all 69 snaps.
Yeah.
In that one. Okay, what else did we want to make sure that we hit on in this show?
I thought Arians, to kind of circle back to Ben, had some interesting comments about golfing with Big Ben and the excitement with Randy Feetner, and said that, you know, he's never seen Ben really, I guess, as happy before, which isn't a surprise because, you know, Feetner is Ben's guy, but just tells you how excited Ben is to come in and work with him.
Yeah, and I don't expect Bruce Arians to say crosswords about Ben.
You know, but Bruce Arians is an honest guy, as you're going to find, though.
Yeah, we'll see how honest he is when he does the Steelers game this year.
Fair enough.
That will be the big test when it comes. And look, I look forward. I think Arians is going to be great in the booth. Is he going to rival Tony Romo? You know, I'm not going to go that far, but I think Arians is good. It's good. I wish in the booth every game you had an experienced offensive play caller and an experienced defensive X's and O's guy, you know,
mm-hmm. Yeah,
and then kind of alternate between those. Because a lot of times, even though we think that we might know what happened and who's to blame, we don't always know.
Sure.
You know, sure. And you know, to have better insight, you know, I think that's a good thing about Romo sometimes is he can kind of decipher that stuff, you know, within 30 seconds of when the play happened there. One thing I thoroughly enjoyed Mike Gundy's talk with Missy Matthews. How about you?
Yeah, I thought it was great. I had one article on it yesterday for Steelers Depot. I mean, granted, he's saying things you would expect, you know.
Right. Yeah, you know, he's going to praise these guys, but boy, yeah. his characterization of James Washington really has to have you excited.
Yeah, I mean, he is kind of the anti-wide receiver in terms of, we know the diva guys, and we know what's happened with AB the last couple weeks, and, you know, Juju, who's not a diva, but he's just very out there. Washington is sounds entirely reserved and just quiet. You know, Gundy saying that Washington doesn't even like social media stuff, and I love the story that Gundy was talking with Mason Rudolph on like a Friday night, and Rudolph studying the playbook, and James Washington is texting a friend about coyote hunting. So, you know, those are just the guys you're getting, guys you're not going to have to worry about the 2 a.m. phone call.
Now, the thing is, the Steelers had a guy kind of similar, to Washington a few years ago, Marcus Wheaton. And, you know, very, very quiet, a guy that you thought, you know, had a pretty decent Exodus background to him. Now, make no mistake about it, James Washington, even though Marcus Wheaton had an accomplished, what I view as an accomplished college career, James Washington has, and we've talked about this, you know, several times since the draft. If there's one guy and one wide receiver even in this year's draft class where you look at his college tape and his college production, you think, we know the guy that we're getting here, it's got to be James Washington. So now the question is can he be that same guy at the NFL level? What did you think about David Todd and my conversation about will he have as many career receptions as Dez Bryant? Were you surprised Dez's numbers were that low? And B, you would think if a guy like James Washington can get himself to a second contract in Pittsburgh, I mean, he could average, you know, 50, 60 catches a year, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think in my head I had around like Dez around 600 catches, so I wasn't too far off, even though he's at like at 530, whatever the number you guys said he is. I mean, it's possible that he gets more just because, again, evolution of the game, and with Dez, it was just, there wasn't the longevity thing. So if a receiver hangs around for 8 years or so in the way this league is, I mean, he's going to naturally rack up the catches. So, I mean, it's possible. I don't think Washington's going to have as good a career as Dez Bryant or anything super close to it. I want to be clear about that. But in terms of the numbers, I mean, yeah, he can put up some numbers with the ability to make the big plays that he does.
Where do you come in on the generational question that AB asked?
I thought you and David Todd framed it well, that, you know, it should only go back about 10 years or so. I think he's the best of the generation if you don't count Randy Moss as part of the AB generation. You know, you could debate Moss versus Brown. I mean, I don't know exactly who I would take, but, you know, if you don't include Moss in that, I think AB's better than Fitz. Calvin Johnson's interesting because, you know, obviously Brown's going to have the numbers when all said and done, and he's going to have the longevity. You know, Johnson was the more physically gifted player. I mean, there's a good debate to be had there. I would take Brown, but, you know, Johnson was a freak that just didn't play for a super long time. But I think AB will be the best receiver of the generation when all is said and done. I think he is probably right now.
Well, let's look at someone like you. I mean, you're half my age. So, I mean, as long as you've been watching football and know you can't bring in people's highlights, you know, from prior to your life, I mean, you've probably never seen much. I mean, outside of maybe Calvin Johnson and Fitzgerald, that's where the conversation ends probably in your lifetime, right?
Yeah, I grew up with still, you know, the Randy Moss and T.O. And Marvin Harrison and Reggie Wayne and guys like that. I want to talk about T.O. before the show wraps up with this Hall of Fame stuff. I want to get your thoughts on that. Don't let me forget. I think it comes down to me, A.B. and Calvin Johnson, and I'm going to give the edge to A.B. not only because I'm being a Steelers homer here, not only, but I think because, you know, Brown does not have the physical tools that Johnson was naturally gifted with. You know, a guy that's 6'5", that can run 4'4", and jump 40 inches. I mean, that's just an insane makeup. A.B. has nothing close to that in terms of the tools, but the fact that they had very similar career arcs in terms of their dominance, I think gives the edge to A.B.
Ryan Shazier had a press conference a few days ago there, addressed his current situation. It's good to see him. I mean, look, he's moving with a cane now and not having to hold on to somebody, but he is still need the assistance of the cane. He went over that really nothing's changed with him. It's just good, you know, for him to finally probably get it out of the way and address some of the questions that he addressed. But, I mean, look, I mean, a lot of people are still going to say that he's never going to play another down again, and I get that. But on the flip side, I mean, he's right at, what, 6 months? Is it 6 months removed?
A little over.
From his injury now? I mean, that injury happened in early December, right?
Mm-hmm. It's about 7 months we're looking at.
So, I mean, just 7 months removed. You know, what were your main takeaways from that, from his talk?
Yeah, it was just good to, you know, I'm assuming it was his idea to have the press conference, which is a really good gesture.
I was too. I mean, I was surprised. You know, I got to admit, when it was immediately announced that he was going to address the media, I thought he was going to announce he was going to retire.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
because
I didn't think so.
Because it came out of nowhere like that.
Right. No, I can totally get that. But it seemed like he just wanted to thank everybody and be transparent, you know, because obviously he's been in his private life, which he has every right to as he's rehabbed and recovered. You know, again, is he going to play again? I don't know. No one knows. I mean, the odds, you know, they're probably not going to be good with how serious of an injury it is. But it's something that makes him happy. It motivates him. If that helps him get through rehab and helps him kind of just, you know, through this whole process, I'm rooting for it because – I mean, if he gets to the point where he gets to at least have that conversation with doctors, then, man, that means his recovery has gone fantastic. That means he's doing exceptionally well. And if he were to ever play again, I mean, it would be the moment of the decade. So I root for it every day. And, you know, I'm not going to be the guy that says he shouldn't play or he's not going to play again. You know, we're not going to have those conversations yet.
No, you shouldn't dictate what anybody should or shouldn't do when it comes to something like this, in my opinion.
Right. Right, I mean, or the people that say it's wrong for him to want to play. You know, Deadspin had that article that was basically just criticizing Shazier for wanting to play again. I mean, that was just asinine. I can't believe they wrote that article.
Right, and will doctors eventually clear him and start? Yeah, nobody knows that. I mean, look, and today we have seen some minor miracles happen in today's medicine. You know, you have guys coming back from these you know significant knee injuries in like 8 months and those kind of things and you know stranger things have happened. So I mean, look, if that's what he wants to do, you know, root for him. I mean, you know, but any other takeaways from that? I mean, to me, it was about 5 minutes too long, but you know.
Yeah, I mean, there wasn't a whole lot there that we didn't know. You know, we just talked about how much he's working and how much he wants to get back. And, you know, obviously that won't happen this year, but maybe he's going to try to, you know, get to a really better place this time next year.
All right, what are your thoughts on T.O.?
Yeah, really strange. Do we know exactly the reason why he's not going? Because it's been reported and floated that it's because he feels like he's been snubbed by the voters. It took him this long to get in. Do we know that for a fact?
I don't know, and I think he's got an interview with Rich Eisen coming up soon. So maybe he'll get a little bit more into that. But who cares, man? You're in. I mean,
yeah, I can't believe it. I can't believe he's not going.
I can't either. And people say, yeah, I can't. I think I posted strange or something like that in my initial reply to that. Look, I mean, the guy's always been a bit of a head case anyway. Yeah, I get it and all. But, dude, you're in. I mean, this is a day 5, 10 years from now, he's going to wish that he's going to regret that he missed it, I think.
Mm-hmm.
You're in. Jeez, does it matter how you got in? You know?
Yeah, right. I mean, you're just kind of justifying, if it is true, that that's why the voters didn't let him in, which is probably some partial truth to it, because you were not a good teammate and a kind of a crybaby. I mean, you're not really – you're proving them right by skipping out on the Hall of Fame. It's the thing that everyone dreams of, and to skip out on it like that, to not be able to get that gold jacket put on, I'm with you. I think he's going to regret it. You know, what was that line? Maybe not now, maybe not tomorrow, but someday and for the rest of your life.
Right. Hey, well, here's the thing. You want to get back at the media, get up there on the podium and take shots at them for 15 minutes if you want to, because they can't take it away from you now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right.
You know?
Yeah,
so
bizarre.
Look, I've always thought I've thought he's been a wide receivers are just different anyway, right? I mean,
as Antonio Brown has proven again in the last
right.
2 weeks.
What do you think about that? I mean, I'm not overly. Are you in the same boat? I mean, if that's the worst thing that happens as the Steelers turn this offseason, it'll be a great thing. But just the same, man, so just leave some of that. Just leave some of that at the house, you know?
Yeah, it's weird. I mean, again, it's not a big deal. It'll blow over, but just like you said, receivers, man, they're a different breed.
Yeah, and the thing with Terrell, I hope he reconsiders. You know, because I would like to look. He's got a great backstory talking about his grandma. And have you seen? He's done the football life already, right? I mean, what's the difference of doing the football life and giving a 15-minute Hall of Fame speech? You know, hopefully somebody will talk some sense into him between now and that happening. But here's a headline for you, Alex, that'll make you want to probably throw your computer screen away. Could the Steelers keep four quarterbacks in 2018?
I saw an article on that yesterday, and I wanted to throw my computer screen. No, they're not going to do it. I mean, you can try to get Dobbs in the practice squad. It's the only way they're going to, you know, entertain four.
Right, and you're probably not, you know, personally, I mean, I there might be enough with Dobbs that he might not make it to. And why? And look, why would I understand why you might want to go to the practice squad if you're Dobbs? Because in you know the year following, Landry Jones is probably not going to be in town. So maybe you circle back there. But you know you're probably going to be number three regardless. Would you have a shot at maybe number two elsewhere? No, the Steelers are not going to keep four quarterbacks on their 53-man roster this year. It's ridiculous that these topics are coming up. Anything else that you would like to get to ahead of? What do you think about the Ravens? What's up with the Ravens and breaking these OTA rules?
What is that, the third time since 2010, I think you wrote?
Yeah, really strange. Unreal, and Harbaugh wants to say it's something related to coverage drills or something, how do you not get it by now? I mean, it it's just crazy.
And he basically just blamed the rookies for it. Like, way to throw the rookies under the bus. That's good accountability and leadership. I don't get it.
All right, guys that we hope, I guess, are practicing fully when mandatory mini camps get underway, I guess, would be Juju, Cameron Hayward. Anybody else that you come to mind that has missed some time with, we think, injuries? I think those are the two main guys, right?
Yeah, I don't know of many guys that have really truly been hurt outside of the guys that obviously were seriously hurt and Hawkinson and McGee. I think Juju, and I think whatever Juju was dealing with was minor. I think Hayward might have been back. Was he back yesterday or not?
He showed the interview, and he had one of the practice jerseys with a number on.
Okay, so if he's not totally back, he's close. I mean, I'm not too worried about any of those guys.
So, and the previous photo that we had on the two earlier in the week, they did not have practice jerseys with numbers on. Not that. Mm-hmm. You know, we're just trying to play sleuths here, you know. But one would think that it was a good sign in the instance of both there. We'll see what we can write about here later on today. And, Alex, I get to spend the night. I get to go on a field trip tonight. I have a sleep study tonight that I have to be out of the house for. Got to go at 9 o'clock tonight. So I'm sure that will go smashingly well for me, as with all this stuff lately. With me.
Make some friends.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, in the meantime, you can follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. You can follow my co-host David Todd on Twitter at David M. Todd. You can follow Alex on Twitter at Alex_Kazora. You can follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. You want to comment on anything that we talked about today, you can do so by sending us an email to theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you like what we try to accomplish on this podcast, want to donate to the cause, go to SteelersDepot.com, hit that donate button, upper right navigational bar. Alex, thanks for sitting in today. And as always, thanks for listening to The Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.